And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
All confidence is high. We believe in our group all throughout this series and this season. And obviously, you know, our performance in the last two games has earned us even more confidence and another game on the schedule. So, yeah, you got great confidence, but it doesn't change the challenge. You know, the challenge is still significant. These games and the series has been extremely tight, and Game 7 certainly would be no different.
Okay, James, here we go again. We're back. Leafs, Bruins, Game 7 again.
You did warn that it wasn't over after Game 4, so you
did.
I guess you've seen enough Leafs, Bruins in your life to know that it ain't over till we get to the end, till we get to Game 7. So
you know what it is? I had just seen too many things this year where it's like, oh, that's happening. And then like they pull a whole U-turn and like they just completely surprise you. So, I mean, this is not that surprising to me just based on the season that they had, but like they've played really well. Like, and they've not had their best player, obviously, these last two games. That's like, it's pretty impressive stuff. I mean, let's start. I mean, I was going to give you the option of where you wanted to start today, and I'll give you three options.
There's something I was going to. The thing that surprised me in like being at some of the games and being around is there's like Boston is imploding. Like Boston, their players and their team and their organization is in full blown panic mode. They almost went into panic mode right after they lost Game 5 in the way that they lost it. And it seems like they're unraveling. They're unraveling on the ice, but behind the scenes, you can see them unraveling too. And just like, there's not a lot of composure. There's not a lot of, they've kind of lost their belief and their confidence, and that's playing out on the ice. And, you know, the coach's job could potentially be in jeopardy. You know, maybe there'll be impact for people higher up. And I don't know. It's, they've had two really good regular seasons. And then if they lose this one, like it feels like, obviously, there's a lot at stake for the Leafs in winning this series, but I think Boston's pretty much about in the same boat, right? Like, I mean, the only difference is that Boston has had some recent deep playoff runs where they've made the final, you know, what is it, twice in the last 13 years or whatever. But this particular group, there is a ton of heat on them right now.
All right. Well, James, I think you logged into the wrong podcast. This is the Leaf Report.
Well, but I just think that that's...
I'm just kidding. Get to that.
Happening, though, Jonas, is that, like, full marks to the Leafs are playing well, but Boston is just, like, completely unraveling.
Okay, well, don't worry. That's on the list. We're going to get to that. But we need to start with something Leafs. So I'll give you three options. We can talk about Nylander, we can talk about Wall, or we can talk about the way that they played defensively these last two games. Which do you want to start with?
I mean, dealer's choice. Let's see what you got, Jonas.
Okay, let's start with Joseph Wall, because, you know, two games, two goals. He had to be exceptional, I think, in these last couple of games, just because of something you and I have talked about all series. They're just not going to score a lot. Again, they scored two goals in Game 6. He has to be great. He doesn't have to be great to start. He didn't have to be great to start Game 5 either. You know, they really locked down in the first couple of periods, or the first period of the last two games. But as that game rolls along, he has to make some saves. And like, you think of like the things that have shifted in this series. I don't know if there's anything bigger than the goaltending. Like, for the first half of the series, albeit like the Leafs aren't generating a ton of chances the whole thing through, but Boston had such a clear advantage in goal for the first, what is it,
four games of the series? Yeah.
And now it's just changed. You know, he's played so well. It's really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of the two things you mentioned, where the Leafs have been really, really good defensively, and Wall's been good when they've needed him. And the reality is that if the Leafs' power play is going to be awful, which it is, and you don't have Austin Matthews, they're probably a below-average offensive team. Like, they don't have, and especially, you know, Marner's been struggling, and so their pathway to win was get good goaltending, don't take dumb penalties, and get some timely goals and try and grind out some 1-0, 2-0, 2-1 wins. We were sitting in the press box and it was like deep into the second period. And I said, I think I said to you and Joshua Cloak, our colleague, I was like, this is going to be a 1-0 game. And it was pretty close to that. You know, Nylander ended up getting the 2-0 goal. And then there was a goal scored with nothing left on the clock. But so the margin for error in these games, it's like one shot from the point from Nylander that goes off at a defenseman and in, and that's a huge, that's basically the margin of victory. So the Leafs have to play like mistake-free hockey. That's not something they've been known for as an organization, but they've gotten two huge performances from Wohl, from their defense group. And you know, it's been really interesting seeing who stepped up, because it's not who we would have predicted coming into the series.
No. I mean, I guess Nylander, you would have predicted coming into the series, but like there was a chance Joseph Wohl didn't play in the series at all. Although I think like everyone thought eventually they would get to both goaltenders, but like, I mean, if Samsonov had played better than he did, maybe they don't get to Wohl. But you're right. Like it was really the way that game was trending through the first period. And they, like, I thought after the first, and the Leafs are out shooting Boston, what was it, 11 or 12 to 1? And you know, the way these things go is if you're not leading at that point, when you're kind of tilting the ice, and like, and granted, like the shot chart wasn't a perfect indication of what was going on in the game, as you pointed out when we were watching it. But usually if you don't score in that spot, the other team is going to score, right? That's just the way it breaks. And Boston came with a lot in the second period, and he just made stops. But the other point you brought up defensively, it's kind of shocking, like these last two games, how little they've given up for the most part. Like Boston had their chances as that game gets going, but they blocked a million shots. Like they were just not letting anything get through. What do you think that is? Like, why do you think it shifted? I think it's been a series wide thing, but imagine, like I told you coming to this series, the offense is going to be the problem. The defense is not. I guess you might have believed it just based on the personnel that Boston has, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, if the surprising things have been like Pasternak has not been dangerous. He hasn't really been a big threat that you've had to worry about. And neutralizing him, the 112 point player or wherever he finished this year, 60 goal scorer, has been huge, because the Bruins don't have a lot of weapons. So, but you know, full marks to the Leafs though. I mean, they've made it very difficult. They're not giving up any odd man rushes. They're not giving up glorious chances in front of the net. And the plan to play lock it down hockey and have these gritty defensemen really clogging up the lanes and getting the defensive performance that they're getting from their forwards, it's worked out really, really well. And, you know, will it work against a team like Florida that has some more offensive weapons up front? It's probably going to be a lot harder, but the Boston unraveling, Pasternak not being able to score. And again, the huge thing is that the Leafs not letting them get on the power play, because Boston's power play was really deadly early in the series. And if they just don't take dumb penalties, Boston's going to have a really hard time scoring. I'm looking at it like first period, both teams 0.27 expected goals. Like basically like there was nothing going on. Like that was not a pretty hockey game. That was not a Picasso. Like it's like the opposite of some of the other series like Winnipeg, Colorado, where there's just goals or Vegas, Dallas. Like it's very, very low event hockey. But I think without Austin Matthews, without a power play that's functional, this is the way the Leafs have to win. And the way they're constructed, they actually have a chance to win this way.
Well, so. And you made many great points, but one I do want to highlight: the last two games, one power play each allowed to Boston. They just haven't taken, like, and that was something we talked about through the first four games of the series. There were a lot of bad penalties, and they were getting into it with Marchand, and now it's kind of flipped where it's like Marchand is kind of losing his composure and the Leafs aren't taking any penalties. And that is a good thing when your penalty kill is not very good. Don't take penalties. They've taken one each in the last two games, right? Like it's a simple concept, but I mean, it's not easy in a playoff series to not take penalties. Like your emotions are so charged up. We haven't touched on the other guy that I did want to highlight early on here, and that's William Nylander. I guess we talked about a little. Two goals, and that was more like the Nylander of normal, but not really the normal Nylander down the stretch of the regular season. Like he was fighting it, you know, the last 10, 12 games of the regular season as he was chasing 100 points, chasing maybe 50 goals.
I didn't even think Nylander was that great in game six. I mean, obviously the goals are great, but I didn't think that he was like all over the ice controlling play. And I thought his line mates both played better than he did. Like Knies was fantastic. Yes. Tavares played really well again.
He's having a really good series, by the way.
Which one?
Tavares. Well, actually, both guys are.
Yeah. Tavares especially. Tavares has been, And, you know, we talked about it going into the series, like him getting the defensive matchup and playing in the D zone and having to like really carry the load. And we're like, can he do that? Like, that's not really.
It's kind of shocking, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, he's made so much progress in that area. Like, I know we've talked about it on the show lots, like 2-3 years ago, they were worried about John Tavares' defensive game and his ability to manage the puck. And he's just what I see from Tavares is you had a good story about him the other day that kind of highlighted this. He's literally leaving everything he has. I mean, how many more chances is Tavares going to have, right? Like he's coming to the end of his contract. Right. Like he's 33 years old. Next year might be his last year as a Leaf. You know, this is it. And he's playing like it. Like he's just, you know, he's never going to be the player that he was 3 or 4 years ago, but if he can play well defensively, I mean, Tavares is still hurting them on the power play. He's not generating a ton of offense, but he's been part of that nullifying the Bruins attack. That's been very effective.
Yeah. It's such a tough balance for them to strike because like if they get past Boston, they really are going to need him to produce offensively. Like he has a goal and an assist through six games of the series, like it's going to be tough to get it done against a higher powered offensive team, but they're also asking him to play the hardest matchups. Like he's playing the Pastrnak line. Like you mentioned, Pastrnak hasn't done a lot in the series. They've neutralized him. I don't know how much of that is Pastrnak, how much of that is what the Leafs are doing. Maybe, I mean, it's obviously some combination of the two. But like, just to go back to Nylander, like what a crazy weird playoffs he's had, right? Like just remember that Friday before game one where it's like he's all of a sudden missing from practice and it's like, well, this is weird. He's never missing from practice.
You and I were talking. It was like, did he like miss a meeting or something, or like what was going on? Because he had played every game during the season and hadn't been injured at all.
Yeah, right. And then like they're saying he's a possibility to play, whatever that means. They said Bobby McMahon was a possibility to play when obviously he wasn't playing, and then he's just not there, and then like he's at the skates and he's not playing, and it's not clear why. And now like the first couple games back, he doesn't really look great. And then, you know, like you're right, like he didn't have a great game, but like he was moving his feet more. I thought he got inside a little bit more. He just looked a little bit more dynamic. And like when he got that breakaway before he scored, I thinking in my head, he's going to score. Like he's not missing that chance. And maybe that'll get him feeling good because like he comes across obviously so cool, so confident, but you could feel in those later stretches or those later games of the regular season that he was in his head and not confident. And like, if they're going to win one more game without Austin Matthews, like he's the guy you look to and you'd say like, that guy is going to have to be great, or Marner is going to have to be better than he's been in the series. Right.
I forget which Leaf it was, but he was asked after the game about Nylander, and he basically just like shook his head and was like, he's a game breaker. And I think that's the way to put it. Like, Tavares, he just said, you know, even when Nylander is not having a good game, if you give him the puck in the right spot, as Knies did on the second goal, like just a beautiful, I didn't even think that pass was there. I thought Knies was going to just bump the puck into the offensive zone. And Nylander was going to get it not clean and not a flat out breakaway. But the way that he was able to chip that out while he was undercover was brilliant. And Nylander's going to score on those a lot. And I don't know if you saw the picture. There's a picture of Nylander right when that puck goes through Swayman's legs. And Nylander's got this giant smile on his face. And it's just like, he's like in his element, right? It's like watching an elite athlete do the thing they're born to do and are amazing at doing. And, that's why Nylander got the contract he got, because he's one of the top most dangerous players in the league. So, They needed one of those guys to break through in order to win that game. They weren't going to be able to count on their you know, it's not like Pontus Holmberg and David Kampf are going to score the two goals that they needed to win that game. So, you know, and without Matthews, they really need Nylander or Marner or Tavares or all of them to step up. And it was Tavares and Nylander. And
yeah,
but you know, that was the best game I've ever seen Knies play. Like, how many minutes did Knies play?
He played. I have it in front of me. 1703. Oh no, this is the wrong game. Sorry, that's the game before.
He played over 19 minutes. He played a ton. Keith just kept throwing him out there, and like he's playing physical. He's making good reads when he's getting
your right.
forecheck. He's playing well defensively.
19.
I didn't know if Knies had this in him. Like, it looked like he was. You know, it looked like he was getting worn down. Early yeah. in the series, and the physicality was taking a toll on him, and he's just, I mean, he's found another level, and it's been very, very impressive. And you know what? We've talked about you go ahead, because I was going to take it in a different direction.
Well, the only thing I would say I would add to Knies that I think is really interesting. Obviously, he's still so young, and he's still obviously figuring out a lot of things on the fly. Yeah,
like a giant puppy out there.
Yeah, but like two things. I mean, the obvious thing with him is like he's huge. So that's like an advantage. But the other thing that he has that really makes that something different is he's so competitive and he's so energetic. And like, you know, sometimes you get these big guys and they don't have that. Like you look at them and you're like, well, they're really big, but it doesn't really matter because they're not playing hard all the time. They're not physical, but he's just like on pucks. He's aggressive. Like, he's not scared. Like, you see all those little elements with him that kind of shine at this point of the year. Anyway, let's take a break and then we'll get into what you want to talk about next. And then we'll talk some game 7. We'll talk a little bit about the Bruins, and yeah, we'll talk Matthews too.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, James, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, we talked about Knies, we talked about Nylander, we talked about Wohl. I think the other player who's been really good in this series, who's gone a little bit under the radar and had a fantastic game 6, was Jake McCabe. Yeah. And who would have, like, that D pair started to look good, what was it, like midway through the season with McCabe and Benoit, and you're kind of like, is this just against bad teams? Is this just a regular season thing? Is this going to last? And it's lasted, and they look really, really good together. And the thing with McCabe is that he's shown flashes of this before, but he's just stepped up, and he's been the best defenseman in the whole series, like either team. I would say he's outplayed anyone on the Leafs, and I think he's outplayed McAvoy as well. And nobody would have predicted that coming into the series, but just I look at the way he's played, and he's going into the last year of his deal, and I'm already thinking, like, they got to extend this guy. Like, this guy should be part of like the core on their blue line going forward. And he combines the elements that Tree Living wants with like the physicality, but he's also got more offensive ability than I think he's shown in the past in his career. He's not making mistakes. He's not running around the ice, and he to me, he looks fantastic.
I'm glad you brought up the pairing, because I think that's an interesting part of this. Because I think the coaching staff, I mean, you can just look at what they did. They had the same thoughts about it clearly that we did. It's like, well, this isn't a real thing. Like, they make the trade for Edmondson and Labushkin, and like, Benoit's just out of the lineup. Like, and they're trying different things, and they're like, you know, they're thinking what I'm thinking. Like, oh, Brody McCabe, that's going to have to be the go-to pair against top lines in the playoffs. And eventually, like, they kind of worm their way back to it, and they just get to a point where they're just like, you know, this pair is just working. Like, we're not changing this. We might try other things. This pair is sticking, and it's just kind of been the same thing as the regular season, where not a lot is really happening. Like, I'm looking at their numbers for the series. 1 goal for, 2 goals against. They played the most minutes by like a little bit more than the Riley Labushkin pair. The underlying numbers are fine given how they're used and who they're playing against. And you're right, like the McCabe thing, like I was not, I still need to see what this looks like over multiple playoff rounds, if they can go that far, because I still have my questions.
Well, he really struggled last year in the playoffs. He did, he was turning over the puck, and some of that was Brody struggling. But I just haven't seen that version of McCabe in this series. He looks confident. He's the kind of player I love too, that can bring all kinds of elements, all around defenseman like this. It's what the Leafs needed. You know, he's Jake Muzzin 2.0 right now. So,
well, and he has a little, well, not a little bit. He's probably like grouchier than Muzzin. Like he's like, if, which is surprising because Muzzin kind of was like grouchy, but like McCabe, I think is 30. Is he 30 or is he 31? He is 30. He'll be 31 in October, but like he comes across like he's like a 50-year-old grizzled.
Well, you said in the press box, and I laughed. It's like, can you believe this guy's like 10 years younger than us? Not me. You said to Josh, he seems, for lack of a better term, he seems like a man, like a, you know, like,
yeah. And I know what you mean.
So, and I, like I said, I love players like that. I remember like when I used to be really into the Canucks and I lived in BC, I really loved Matthias Olin and the way that he played. And it's kind of just like big, strong, silent type, doesn't make a lot of mistakes, you know, just always in the right place. And, you know, so he's been a revelation in this series. He's had a good season, but he's had a great postseason so far.
Well, and I'll be curious to see like if they can get past Boston, what he looks like in a more difficult matchup, because obviously you mentioned the Florida series last year was difficult for him, but credit to him. It was his first playoffs last year. I think that was a big thing for him. He wasn't comfortable, I don't think. And like just talking to him, he is more comfortable now having been through it. We should talk about some of the Bruins stuff you were talking about. Matthews seems unlikely he'll play in game 7. Like, obviously there's a chance. We're recording this on Friday evening, early evening. So maybe he gets on the ice on Saturday and he feels okay, but
it sounds very unlikely.
Unlikely, right?
Yeah. It sounds like he's got something. He's got an injury that's very significant. This isn't the illness anymore. This is, unfortunately, trying to play through the illness led to something else. So,
okay. Well, before we get to like some of the game 7 history, you mentioned the Bruins. Do you think that that's just what is partly happening? Like, obviously part of this is what the Leafs are doing, but they're kind of tightening up and like,
yes,
feeling like, oh no, this is happening again.
Yes. And even just talking to the Bruins media, they're watching it and they're like, oh, they're doing it again. They're doing what they did last year. They can't score. They're taking bad penalties. You know, like Lindholm's supposed to be an elite defenseman. Like, you barely even notice him in this series. Like, they're just like, have you noticed DeBrusk in this series? I mean, early on, he had
early
some
on, for like, sure. Yeah.
Charlie Coyle's supposed to be a good player. I haven't noticed him very much. Like, there's just like, it doesn't seem to matter what line they put out there. It's not like you're afraid of anybody. Marchand was like the only one that was intimidating in the first 4 games in the series. And then he's unraveling on the ice and pushing linesmen and doing all kinds of dumb stuff. And, you know, Bertuzzi's like playing on the right side of the line now, and Marchand's on the other side of the line and getting frustrated. And it's very interesting. It almost feels like the tables have turned and the Bruins are playing like we're used to the Leafs playing, and the Leafs are playing the way that we're used to watching the Bruins play.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned like offensively, like I'm looking at the regular season numbers. So Pastrnak has 110 points. Number 2, Marchand with 67. Coyle with 60 and Zacha with 59. And then it's like guys in the 40s and 30s. Like there's
Zaka's been brutal. He's last on their team in the underlying numbers. He's at like 40%. And they're just, they don't, without, if they had Bergeron, I think this series would look different. But without Bergeron, they don't have that depth down the middle. And it's not like the Leafs are the deepest team in the world down the middle right now. Like they're running Domi, Tavares, Holmberg, Kampf.
Yes.
But the Leafs are winning the battle at center. It looks like they're winning the battle on defense. And I didn't think either of those things would happen with Matthews out of the lineup. So full credit to the Leafs for doing that.
Yeah, it's impressive. And you know, you mentioned some of the stuff, like there are similarities in terms of like the stakes of this series, where it's like now Jim Montgomery is probably thinking, oh, like if this happens again, what happens to me? And like
nothing good.
Right. Like it's just, there are a lot of parallels. They're not facing, I don't think, the same existential pressure as the Leafs, just because they, like you mentioned, they have more success. But man, like back to back 3-1 leads blown potentially would not be good for them.
It's never happened before. No one's ever done it.
Is that true?
No one in any sport has ever blown a 3-1 lead 2 years in a row.
Wow.
Yeah.
Blow my mind. That's insane.
Well, it hasn't happened very much. I mean, how many times have people, I think it's 59 times in the history of pro sports, a team's come back from down 3-1. Like it does not happen very much.
Is that true too?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
It doesn't happen. Hockey, it happens more than the other sports. But if you look at like baseball and NBA, like it's barely ever happened. Hockey, it's happened like 30 sometimes. And the Leafs have done it. The Leafs have definitely done it before, but it's just not a common thing.
Wow.
Normally, when a team goes up 3-1, they're the better team and they only have to win one of the next three games. And I think it's 50% of the time, the team that forces a game seven after being down 3-1, 50% of the time they win and 50% of the time they lose. So it's not over yet.
Well, yeah. I mean, Sheldon Keefe mentioned that, I think at the availability on Friday, where he basically said, like, we've dug ourselves out of the hole that we basically dug for ourselves. I'm paraphrasing and not doing a very good job of it, but like basically they put themselves in a hole and now they've dug their way out of it. Now they still have to win a game on the road. How much do you think like the past matters at all? Like there are only 5 players left from 2019, but there is something like to like a history between two teams. And obviously this has happened.
Well, Boston's had their number in their regular season too, right? Like it's been, Boston's been a really hard place for this franchise to play for as long as you and I have been around the team. Like they've had a hard time against Boston going all the way back, and their division rivals, their original 6 rivals. And like the Leafs record against Boston over the last, whatever, 15 years. Like I remember that 2013 series, like them going in there, they were such huge underdogs. And that 2013 team wasn't as good as this team, this Leafs team, but it's just felt like they've been underdogs against Boston. And Boston's been one of the model franchises in the NHL for a long time. They win that cup in 2011, but you know, Chara and Bergeron, and they went to the final again. The one that they lost to St. Louis was at 2019 for 5 years ago. You know, like they've just accomplished so much more than the Leafs as an organization have over the last 15 years. And I don't know, it just feels like right now these teams are evenly matched. But for Toronto to be able to win this series without Austin Matthews is, I don't know if very many people would have predicted that.
I mean, go listen to the podcast after game 5. But you mentioned like just the underdog thing. So I talked to James Van Riemsdyk like before the series, and literally my question was like, do you remember much about 2013? And obviously he plays for the Bruins now. And one of the things he said, I'll read you it. He said, he still remembers it. Obviously game 7 happened how it happened, and that still sucks for anyone who's on that team to this day. But I think again, blah, 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 blah. It's funny how it can shift pretty quickly, where we were the big underdogs and we fought all the way back, and then all of a sudden it went the other way. I think it just goes to show you in the playoffs, it's just important to stay in each moment and just worry about the next shift.
Well, that's, and I think the point that Keith made is that it doesn't, it's great that the Leafs showed some heart that I was talking about them lacking after game 4. And it's great that they battled back, but it's really only going to matter if they get it done, right? Like if they go to game 7 on Saturday and lose 5-0,
that's it. No, it won't matter.
They're still going to have to make changes, and there's still going to be a, you know, like the postmortem. Like, think about it this way, Jonas. Like, going into this series, if we said that the Leafs lose in Game 7, no one would be like, "Oh, that's a big win for them." Even if we said, you know, Nylander missed some of the games and Matthews missed some of the games, you know, the expectation on this team is still that they're going to find a way to advance.
It won't matter. You're right. Like, it's they're trying to win a cup. Like, winning a round or like losing in 7 in the first round doesn't like get you anything. Like, we think back to that Montreal series and how they lost a 3-1 lead. Does anyone mention that Tavares missed like the entire series? No, like, because like that stuff just washes out. Like, it matters what the result is. And if like you keep losing in the first round, like, that's not good enough.
If it was a one-off where you're missing a star player and you lose a series, you can chalk it up to that. But look, it's happened. The Leafs are 8 years into the making the playoffs and the Shanna plan. This is the 9th series that they've played. It's time for them to show that they can battle through adversity and beat a really good team in the playoffs, because that's what the playoffs is about. And it's one round. And if you're going to win a cup, you have to do it 4 times, and you have to, you made a great point on a podcast. What was that? I can't remember if it was the last one or two, just about like the teams that have, like, look at Tampa's won a cup with Stamkos not playing, and Pittsburgh won the cup with Letang not playing and a makeshift defense. And everyone said they're not going to be able to do it. There's been lots of examples of teams winning with backup goalies because of injuries or poor play. There's lots of examples in the Stanley Cup playoffs of teams winning without a star or you know, winning around. Even remember the Leafs team was at 2002 where Sundin was out and missed.
Yes, you know, I've been thinking about that a lot lately.
And no one thought Sundin was such a big part of that team, one of the, you know, top 10 player in the NHL. And they just came together and found a way with some of their depth players, their character guys came, you know, Gary Roberts stepped up and Tucker stepped up, and, you know, they just, and I remember, like, you know, as a non-Leafs fan back then, I think I was in college, and I loved watching the way they fought even without their captain and went on that run. And that's what this Leafs team, they have the potential to do that if they can find a way to win this Game 7 on Saturday.
Yeah. And I think there's something reminiscent about that with this team, where it's just like, when somebody is out, I think everybody seems to kind of realize that they're going to have to play a little bit differently.
The other thing I want to, like, Marner has not been good. Like, he still hasn't been good. He wasn't good in 5 or 6. Like, he's not, you know, he was under 50% expected goals possession. He didn't generate a lot of chances. He's playing on the perimeter a lot. So not only do you not have Matthews, you have Marner really not playing well, and they're still finding a way to win games. And
yeah,
if they can get Marner to break through in Game 7, he's got a chance to really change the narrative around him, because, you know, right now, I think if they lose that game, there's going to be a lot of fingers pointed at him, potentially the coaching staff.
James?
Management probably too.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing with Marner is, like, I partly defended him halfway through the series because he was being used in a very difficult matchup. He was basically being used like he's like Nick Bonino or David Kampf. That's not true anymore. Like, that he's on a line that's getting like many offensive zone. And it's like the same thing offensively is happening that's happened in previous playoffs, where it's just, there's just not a lot going on.
I thought Game 5 was his best game. Like, I that line in Game 5, especially in the beginning, was all over the Bruins. And we talked about it, you know, like,
yeah, you're right. And he does
Game 6, though. Like, I didn't see a whole lot. The power play is a disaster. Like, it's 4-minute power play was embarrassing.
If they had lost that game, that was going to be a big part of why they lost. Like,
they lose this series, the power play is going to be like, probably it might be the number one reason they lose. Like, it's been so bad, embarrassingly bad.
It was not even competent in that last game.
They need to change the personnel. Like, they should eat. Like, power play 2, the second unit looks better than PP1. Like, PP1 is just, Morgan Riley also, I should mention, was not good in Game 6. Like, he made so many mistakes with the puck, like, really uncharacteristic. And I don't know if that's an injury or he's nervous or what, but, like, so for the Leafs to be missing Matthews, to get a poor game from Marner, to get a not very good game from Riley and still win against Boston, it's very, very impressive. And I think the other thing I wanted to say too, Jonas, because I know where this is going to be a short one, but I think Keith finally sat Ryan Reeves. Yes. He created that checking line with Kampf, Yarncroc, and Dewar, and they dominated the minutes that they played. They were so good. Like, that was the best that line has looked all season. And so credit to the coaching staff for finally doing that. And that's something we
talked about. Listening to what we were talking about.
But they finally, like, Dewar's played great in this series. Yarncroc's played great. They're getting more out of those guys. Gregor came in and looked like he had fresh legs, and you know, he didn't play very many minutes, but like, I liked what they did, the adjustments they made, and you know, they got a, and I should,
you know, maybe what's, you know what, James, just to add a point to that.
Yeah.
It's basically, we may as well call it like if it's working, the nothing happens line. This is their line from game six. That line played 725. There was zero shots for, one shot against, no goals against, no goals for, no scoring chances either way. Yeah. No high danger chances.
You just stick them in the D zone.
0% zone starts, 7 defensive zone draws. Yeah, you're right.
Stick them in the D zone. They play, you know, a quarter of the minutes at 5-on-5, and
yep,
you feel good playing them against good players, that they're going to make safe plays, get the puck down to the other end of the ice, get a face off in the O zone, roll out the Domi line, and then hopefully they can convert. And they did that. You know, they're playing physical, and Kampf takes that hit from McAvoy, and like,
that didn't look good.
I was watching him on the bench. I was like, is he concussed? Is he going to come back? The trainer was working on rebuilding his nose there for like a long time. And Kampf was just sitting there with his gloves off, like looking at the ground. Like, you could tell he was in a lot of pain and discomfort. You know what it's like when you get hit in the nose? Like,
yes,
I can't imagine getting hit that hard in the nose, what it feels like. And he came back and played well. And like, so it's another example of guys just playing playoff hockey. I mean, that's what it is. The other player I think I could shout out is Lyubushkin's been better than I expected as well over these two games.
Yes, I think that's an important qualifier. He was having a ton of problems with the puck earlier in this series. So just to close off, if they are to win game five, I think it's pretty clear Joseph Woll has to continue playing like...
You mean game seven?
Game seven. Game five, jeez. I'm losing it. Game seven, I think Woll obviously has to continue to play the way he has. And I mean, they're going to, like you mentioned, I think you need a game from Marner or Tavares or Nylander.
Stay out of the box. Stay out of the box. The penalty kill cannot. And they,
yeah,
they
right, need, James. Like, it's okay if your power play is going to suck if your penalty kill is just fine.
Or if it's not never out there. Like, the only penalty they took was the goalie taking a penalty. Like, that's...
Yes.
That's what they need to do, because you can't, Boston's power play is going to pick them apart. So yeah, Woll plays well. One or two of the stars step up. The supporting cast continues to do what they do. They get two goals and you got to play a good road game. And, you know, maybe you get outshot, or, you know, maybe you got to grind out the end of the game, but it's going to be a one goal game, right? Like, it's going to be, and the great thing that the Leafs have been able to do the last two games is not get beat on a cheap one like they did in game three when Frederick put that one past Samsonov, yes, and probably should have led to him coming out of the lineup. The Leafs have shown an ability to play in a 0-0 game for long stretches and just get thread a shot through from the point. Like, look at the McCabe goal game five, the Nylander goal game six. Like, they're not pretty scoring chances, but that's what they need to do. They need to score some ugly goals. And they got a chance.
All right, James, we will see what happens. Game seven on Saturday. Game seven, not game five. Game seven on Saturday. We'll be back Monday, Tuesday. We'll see what we'll be talking about. TBD. Great job by you. Great job by Punch. Thank you to everyone for listening. Enjoy the game on Saturday, and let's see where this goes. Goodbye, James.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.